Okay, we're starting at the top of Ayin Bet Amud Aleph, about five lines down. Last word on the line. O Gavra, Damalei Lechavrei, Im Azbinina La, Laha Ara, Hucham Azbinina La. If I sell this plot of land that I have, if I sell this house, I will only sell it to you. Now, they did this with a Kenyan. They Konumine Bekenyan Sudar, that he locked them in to say that you will sell, if you sell this piece of land, you're going to sell it to me. Azal Zavna Le'ishina Shechrina, of course, he went and sold it to someone else. So Amar Rabbi Yosef, Konakama. The first one has the kinyan on it. The individual who he had made the agreement with has a kinyan on it. Amar Abaye, Valo Pasuk. Wait a minute. He didn't set a price yet. And the only agreement was that if you sell the land, I'll sell it to you. But they never came to agreement on price. Who says they could have come to an agreement on price? And who says there's Gemirat Hadat without an agreement on price? We saw yesterday, and the Gemara is going to bring it again today, without Pisuk Damim, without a price being set, there is no Gemirat Hadat. So, Umina Temra, Dohoechot Lo Pasuk Lo Kono, we're going to show you, or how can I show you, that whenever there's no price set, there is no Kinyan. It's not our Mishnah. Person who sells his wine to a non-Jew, pasak achlo madad, he sets the price before the measuring damav mutarim. Then the money is fine; it's not considered money of yain nesech. Madad achlo pasak. On the other hand, if he measures out, pours out the wine before they came to agreement on price, damav asurim, because we say there is no gemirat hadat; it's still in the possession of the Jew, and it became yain nesech in the possession of the Jew. And when he sells it, it's demay yain nesech, and it's asurim. So it says, Mahavi Allah. So what's the din? It says, Mahavi Allah, Kidamridon. We already, what do you mean? It's like we said already. What do you mean what the din is? Like we said before, Dilma Khumadiyai Nesach Shaini. Who says that this is a din at large? Who says that this applies to anywhere else besides Yai Nesach? This might be a Khumrah of Nayai Nesach that you need Pisuk Damim in order to have a Gemirat Hadat. Maybe in Kol HaTorah Kula, even without Pisuk Damim, you can have Gemirat Hadat with a Kenyan. Just in Yai Nesach, we're machmir that you need not only a Kenyan, but you need Pisuk Damim. Tashma. Damar Avidi Ba'avin Uvda Hava Be Rav Chista, Rav Chista Be Rav Huna. So if these two cases, a case in a house of Rav Chista, or the Beis Medrash Rav Chista, and then one Rav Chista Be Rav Huna. Pashte Meho. And they brought a proof, or they answered the question from here. That's not. Mashach Chamarav Upo Alav Ve'ichnisan Letoch Beito. Bein pasak achlo madad, or bein madad achlo pasak lo kana. So here we have chamarav, are the donkey drivers, upo alav, and the workers, and they're carrying a load on them. And now he wants to purchase what's on these donkeys or what's on these workers. So if he mashach the chamarav upo alav, can you mashicha on them? As Rashi says, ein mashicha kone b'nei adam uperot koz man shalayu. Lokana. Here he did a kinyan mashicha on the donkey drivers or the donkeys and the poalim. There's nothing to talk about. So even if he brings them into his house afterwards, ben pasak achlo madad, whether there was a agreement on price before they, you know, went and laid out how much or the produce was there, ben madad achlo pasak, or whether they measured and then went to name lokana, because there's no kinyan over here. Ushneim yachol agzorban, and both of them can back out of the transaction because there was no gemir tadat, there's no kinyan. Pirkan, v'yichnisan etoch beito. Now then, if they unload them, and then he takes them into his house. So now once they're unloaded already, we can talk about a kinyan mishicha, we can talk about a kinyan agba. He's taking the peirot or the produce into his house. Pasuk achlo madad, if they came to an agreement on price before they measured how much they're taking in, ein shneim yecholim lechzor behen. Neither party can back out of it because you had both a kinyan and a gemirat hadat because of the pisuk damim. On the other hand, madad, achlo pasak, if he measures out the amount that he's going to take before they come to agreement on price, shneim yecholim lachzor behem, both of them can back out of it. So you see from here, that pisuk damim is essential for gemir tadat. That the kinyan, here, the kinyan mishicha, the kinyan al-bal, only takes effect when you have pisuk damim, when you have an agreement on price. So the agreement on price is essential to create the atmosphere in which there's gemir tadat for a kinyan. And so too over here, in our case, when this person said, I'm going to sell the land to you and no one else, when he goes out and sells it to someone else, right, there's no recourse for the first individual because they never came to an agreement on price. They didn't come to an agreement on price. There's no Gemirat Hadat in the Kenyan. The Kenyan Suda that was done had no Gemirat Hadat. And therefore, when he sells it to the second party, the first party can't come back and take it away from him or gay kanakama, like Rav Yosef said. That's a bias proof that piece of dummy makes a difference. That's it. That was it. Tashma. That was the end of that piece of the sugya. Now the Gemara is going to get into another case that's corollary to the case we just spoke about, which is how gavra. Damale le chavre. So if I sell this land, I'll do it b'me'ah zuzei, with 100 zuz. So now we have pisuk damim and a kinyan. So that should solve all of our problems, and everybody should agree now that it's final. It works. Also, of course, again, someone's willing to pay 120, sold it to them. So Rav Kano, based on what we saw from Yosef and Abai before, it says, the first guy has it, it's his, because they had an agreement to pay. They had a kinyan, they had a piece of domain, should be an open and shut case, there should be nothing to talk about. Matkifla Rav Nachman Ar Pokud, Afilu Aizuze Yansul. He's an onus over here. Somebody offered him more money, and that forced him to sell it to the person with more money. And the locha is like Rav Yaakov ben Arpakud. So what does that mean that the money forced him over here?
How could he refuse if he
missed the right. So Rashi says, Ansua. The one who gave him 120 is the one who forced him to sell. He wouldn't have sold otherwise. He wasn't necessarily ready to sell. But this guy showed up with 120. He said, 120? Of course I'm going to sell it. Now, v'chol kama d'loy v'lei kulei hai. If they don't give him 120, he would not sell it. Lava b'dat elizvuna. At 100, he wouldn't have sold it. At 120, he's willing to sell it. So now, when he made the deal with him, if I sell the property, I'll only sell it to you, that was assuming that he was, if I sold it for 100, I'll make sure that you're the one to get it. But here, where he's forced to sell it only because the price, somebody's offering so much money, he really wouldn't have sold it at the level that he agreed on. He's selling it at a much higher level. There, but you, even Zvinale, Vishabio Kamarle. And he's basically, the condition, or what he's saying to him is, if I sell it at this price, you are the first right of refusal. But over here, he didn't sell it willingly. He said it against his will. So he says, if I make a decision to sell it and sell it at this price, you have the right, the first right of refusal. On the other hand, if I'm forced to sell it because someone offers me this enormous sum, in that case, I wasn't intending to sell it. That's not what I had in mind when I made this deal with you. So it's an amazing thing because here you have what seems to be a contractual obligation between two parties. One party says, and you have Gemir Tadat. One party says, listen, if you sell it, I want you to sell it to me. They agree on the price that they'll sell it to. He goes ahead, and then all of a sudden, it's as if the contract doesn't exist. It's as if it's null and void. So that's what Gemir says. There's only Gemir Tadat is limited over here. The contract and the Gemir Tadat are limited here, limited to the situation in which he sells it at that price, and where he willingly sells it at that price. He sells it at a higher price because... And now all of a sudden he finds himself in a position where, wow, if I can sell for that price, then I'll sell it. Otherwise, maybe I won't sell it. That's not what was intended, and that's not what's included inside of the contract. So that means their deal is very limited. Very limited about it. He basically has a first right of refusal if it's sold at that price. Sold at a higher price sounds like he might even have a first right of refusal there. Might be that he could sell it. I would assume that if the individual offered him the same amount of money, that he would consider selling it to him. But I'm not sure there's a contractual obligation to sell them even at the higher price. So if I sell it willingly at this price, you have the first right of refusal. All right, now the Gemara says, Amalei kedishaymi bitlato. They come to an agreement about selling, and they say, the way that these three people assess the property, that will be the determination of what the price is. So if he says that, afilu trei mi gotlato, then even if two out of the three agree on the price, that's the price that's set. Why? Because when he says Kishaymi Bitlata, he's referring to the equivalent of what would have been a Beis Din. Beis Din of three. In a Beis Din of three, we work that, we go Achar Rov. That's how we paskin by Beis Din. So it's over here, when he says Kishaymi Bitlata, the way that they do it with three people, that's the same way they do it in Beis Din, and therefore a majority would be sufficient. Now he says, on the other hand, if he doesn't say Kishaymi Bitlata, but rather Kidamre Bitlata, that the way the three say, then it's ad amrei talato. Then it's until three say. There he's not using a terminology that references to Beis Din, the way Beis Din assesses, or the way Beis Din assesses with the three, and therefore Rov is enough. Over here he says, ad amrei talato, he says the way three say means literally three people, and we need all three of them to come to agreement on price. Kedishaymi ba'arba, the way four assess it, ad amrei ba'arba, then until four of them agree on the price, there's nothing to talk about. Because the Shaymi Ba'arba, he can't be referring to a Beis Din anymore. Four already is outside the purview, or outside the possibility of being a Beis Din. So when he says Kedishaymi Ba'arba, it's clear that he means each individual speaking up, or the four of them speaking up, because he went to a number that's greater than a Beis Din. So he's not using Beis Din anymore. Certainly if you use the Lashon of Kedamrei Barba, which by Tzlatza even works, that you need all three of them, certainly there you'll need four people to agree on price. Says the way three people assess it, that will be the value that we agree on, that will be the price agreed on, and then the transaction will go through at that price. So Amar Le'idoch, what do you mean? You brought these three experts in? I have another three experts who are much better at assessing this. Why don't you bring those in? So Amar Papa, Dinu Demakev. Rav Papa says, you know what? He's right. Why should it be these three are any better than other three? He should be able to bring his three in as all, also. How do you know that the next three experts that are brought know any better than the first three experts are brought? And then, ain't the double self. Everybody's going to say, no, I got better experts. So he says, talk like Ravuna Brei de Rav Yeshua. That's it. You bring three experts in, that's the end of the game. Now, assumption is here. Right, so we don't say, maybe that's how they get the three experts together. They use a Zavla methodology for getting three experts together. What's interesting here, it's unclear from the Gemara, first of all, who is bringing the first three, and then who is objecting? I read it the way that the Gemara seems to flow, which is that it's the seller brought the three, and then the buyer objects. But the Gemara doesn't say who brought the three, and almost says idach by the other. So it could be the same way around. If the buyer bought three, and then the seller objected. That's number one. It's unclear from the Gemara. Number two is, it's unclear what, in the end, the conclusion of the Gemara is. How are these three experts picked? Is it automatically, if three experts come, then that's it, we're done? Or, like David was suggesting over here, that there's some participation by two parties in creating the three experts, and then afterwards there's an objection. Although, from the way the Gemara reads, it sounds like the seller brought the three experts, and the buyer had nothing to do with it. And then the buyer wants to object. It's true. Although they came to an agreement that they would sell it based on the assessment of price. But it sounds like here that the mocher might be the one who's able to determine. Like you're saying, the mocher says, I'll like whatever the assessment price is, and therefore he brings the experts in to settle what that price is. All right, next Mishnah. The Talat HaMashpech, he takes the funnel, Umadadu toch slochito, and then he pours it into his flask through the funnel, Shel Oved Kochavim. So what now, he has his own mashpech, his own funnel, and he pours the wine, is a Jewish mocher selling the wine, he pours it through his funnel into the non-Jews flask. And then afterwards, he uses the same funnel to pour wine into a Jew's flask. Im yesh bo kavat yayin, asur. If there was residual wine in the mashpech, inside of the funnel, then it's problematic. Person is pouring from one kli to another kli, etchira mimenu mutar. The kli that the wine is leaving is mutar, etchira the tocho asur. The wine that it's going into is asur. Assume here that we're talking about, in the end, we'll see, it's an ovei kochavim. It's a non-Jew who's pouring the wine from one barrel to another. And we saw earlier in the Masechta, and here's the source for it, that when it comes to the koach of an ovei kochavim, here he does not come into direct contact with the wine. It's only contact with the wine is picking up the barrel that he's going to pour into the other utensil. Well, there we said that koach chachamim only goes there when it leaves the barrel, not when it's inside the barrel. So therefore, the barrel he's pouring from, the wine inside of that barrel, totally fine. If he stops in the middle, whatever's left in that barrel is fine. Whatever leaves the barrel, that's going to be problematic, and that's why the one that receives the receiving utensil or the receiving barrel is problematic, because it's koach of the oved kochavim that has now left the original barrel and now in the secondary barrel, which will make it asur. It's non hatam. The Mishnah Tarot, Hanitzok, Vakitafres, Mashketofeach, any chibur, lolo tuma, velo tara. So Nitzok, we've seen before, and that's obviously what we're going to get involved with over here. Nitzok is an arc of pouring. The flow of, here will be wine, but the flow of any material, liquid that's moving from one object to another object. Ktafres is a incline in which water is flowing down an incline. Mashketofeach is an area that's moist. For instance, you have an area that's moist, and on either side you have liquids. So over here, they're not a chibur l'chtuma or l'tara, which means that, for instance, you have a puddle of some liquid on one side, a puddle of liquid on the other side, And connecting them is some moist area in between. That's not a chibur. If a tamei person touches the liquids on one side, it does not affect the liquids on the other side. Well, for instance, you have a mikveh that has water in it, and then you have a ketafres, and then there's an incline which has water pouring down it, and it lands in another ashbor, another mikveh of water. If there aren't 40 sa'a in each one of the mikvaot, then it doesn't matter. The mikveh, the fact that they're attached by this flow of water that goes down the incline, that doesn't matter in terms of making a chibur to make them into a single mikveh, and also for tumah. If the liquid on one side is tamei, the liquid on the other side is not necessarily tamei, and the same thing will be with a nitzok. A nitzok will not be a chibur for tumah. If there's tumah in the bottom barrel, and he pours from the top barrel into the bottom barrel, if the liquids that enter the bottom barrel are now tamei, that does not arc back up and bring the tumah back up to the origin or the barrel that has the liquid in it that he's pouring from. So that's what it means. In there's no chibur for tara and tumah. So hashborin, when it comes to a collection of water, then chibur le tumah le tara. That will be a chibur for tumah and tara. So namar avuna nitzok vaktafres umashke tofei chibur leinyan yai nesach. So Rabuna's statement is that even though it doesn't work for tarot, for tumah and tara, it does work by yayin nesach. All these items will create a chibur for yayin nesach and be a problem. If there's yayin nesach on one end and they're attached to other wine through one of these vehicles, the wine on the other end will also be yayin nesach. Samalei Rav Nachman, the Ravuna, Manalacha. Where do you know this from? If you learn it out from the Mishnah and Tarot, and he talk like a top phrase, so you'll make a diuk that it doesn't work by Tumah and Tara, but it does work by Yayin Nesech. Ema Seifa Hajborin Chibur the Tumah and Tara comes to a collection of water, then that is a Chibur for Tumah and Tara. The Tumah Tarahu Decha Avi Chibur Alin Yayin Nesach Lo Avi Chibur. So what do you say? You make the diuk out of the Seifa also, that Hajborin only works a collection of water, you know, in a still water in a single place, is a connection or chibur for Tumah Tara, then you're going to imply that for Yayin Nesach it's not. That makes no sense. If you want to say the ratio is Mediyak, that a Yayin Nesach is for all these other items which are lesser connections, then certainly the Seifa is a connection. So you can't be make a deal out of this Mishnah. So Ali Nesach, Lo Avi Chibur, Ela Mahal Lekel Amash Mimina. From that Mishnah, you can't make any conclusions. So why do they bring it here? Let's look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah here in Avodah Zarah seems to be talking about a nitzok. And why is that? Because it's not. Now tell it to Mashpech. He took the funnel. Madad toksel chidosh over chachamim. He poured into the non-Jews' flask. Chazaru madad toksel chidosh Israel. And then he goes and pours into the Jews' flask. We said in the Mishnah, im yesh bo akavet yain, if there are leftover drops on the barrel, asur. Ha akavat yain b'may kametasro. The wine that is in the funnel, how did it ever become asur? Why is the wine in the funnel asur? He's pouring wine from his own. The Jew is pouring wine from his own storehouse. That wine is totally fine. The wine that ends up in the flask of the Ovid Chachavim is yayin nesach. So now he pours derech a funnel. Now the funnel, wine that's left over in the funnel is wine from the Jew's source. It didn't ever touch the yayin and the yayin nesach. How was it connected to the yayin nesach below? Only through a nitzok. The chibur was through the flow, or the arc of flow. Here it's not an arc, it's a funnel that drops the liquid down. That connection makes what is in the funnel a yayin nesach. It makes what's in the funnel a yayin nesach. Then the kivat yayin, those leftover drops, are problematic, or yayin nesach. So, gemar la benitzok, shma mina, nitzok chibur. From our Mishnah, you can conclude that nitzok is a chibur. Earlier on in the Sechta, we brought this Mishnah down, and over there, well, we didn't really bring it down, we brought down the answer that the Gemara gives over here, which is that we're talking about here, Tani Rabbi Chiya, Shepachsato Tzlochito. No. The reason that the wine in the Mishmashpech became problematic is not because of Nitzok Chibur, but rather, he was filling the wine up. He fills up the flask below. You know, when you're filling up any bottle or anything with a funnel, eventually the lower utensil rises to the point where the liquid actually enters into the funnel. So that's what happened over here. He's pouring from his wine up top. The flask below is Yayin Nesach of the Goy. It fills up to the point that it reaches into the flask itself. Well, it's in the flask itself. The reason it's Yayin Nesach is because it has a straight chibur, not an itzok. It's attached to the wine that's in the flask of the goy. So then when he pulls the funnel out afterwards, any wine that's left in there is going to be wine of Yayin Nesach. The question is, once you say that, what's the chiddush? Why is there a chiddush? Of course the wine that's in the mashpech, if it touched the wine that was in the flask below, of course it's a Yayin Nesach. Why is there any chiddush at this point in time? So Rashi claims that the chiddush is that it comes to teach us that even though nitzok is not a chibur, nevertheless, this type of pachsato, tzlochito, when it reaches up in the mashpech, is considered a chibur. Doesn't seem to be as big a chiddush. Tosfos gives an additional, he says, that it comes to teach us that afal pi she'ein hayayin nishar klal b'mashpech, filihachi asur. Even though the wine that's in the flask never remains in the mashpech, it all flows out, and there's no closure. Anything that's in the mashpech will automatically flow out the bottom of the mashpech. So it seemed like there shouldn't be anything there. Nevertheless, we're saying these residual wine is still classified as yayin nesech over here. Now, the mashpech itself, over here, the Rabbeinu Tam originally said that the bar mashpech over here was made of eitz, was made out of wood, and therefore only if there were actual drops there would you have a problem. Versus the Gemara later on, which seems to say that if you have a mashpech, you have a funnel, you have to clean it out. It was used for yayin nesech, you need to niguv, you have to dry it out and clean it out. So how come over here you don't have to do that except if there are really drops there? So Rabbeinu Tam originally wanted to suggest, the Gemara later on is talking about kli cheres. Cheres is absorbent, much more absorbent. Never you have to minagave it in order for it to be okay to use again. As opposed to over here, where it's out of eitz, out of wood, and therefore it's not so absorbent, therefore you don't have to worry about it. The Rabbeinu Tam in the end reversed his position, said both cases are talking about wooden funnels. What's the difference between the Gemara later on, which says you have to clean it out, and the our Gemara over here? It says depends on whose it is and what's used for. She says, over here, we're talking about a mashpech Yisrael. It's about a Jewish funnel. So in general, the Jewish funnel is used for, is fine. There's not Yayin Nesach sitting there all the time. Just, occasionally, if he has a course for a goy and it fills up all the way to the top, there'll be some Yayin Nesach in there. So therefore, only if there's really Yayin left is it a problem. And then later on, when we're talking about the mashpech, later on, it's talking about a govin kochavim. Yeah, therefore, it was used over and over and over again with Yayin Nesach. There, you need to be minagavid in order for it to clean out. So that'll be the difference here in the Lacha here versus what we're going to see later on in the Gemara. Not today, but in upcoming Dapim. Avalo pachsot luchito mai. So Rabbi Chiya now says that the wine flowed up all the way into the funnel. So that's why it's problematic. But sounds like from this, that if it didn't rise up into the tzluchit, mai, lo tifshot nitzok enu chibur, wouldn't that imply that nitzok is not a chibur? The fact that Rabbi Chiya requires it to rise all the way into the funnel to be problematic suggests that he thinks that nitzok is not enough of a reason. No, the Gemara says, lo, pasakto tzlichot tifshot l'chod asur. No, he says, I know for certain that if it rises into the funnel, it's asur. Again, the chiddush either according to Rashi or Tosfot we saw, nitzok tibai, but when it comes to a nitzok, I still don't know, and that's why Rabbi Chiya was tana. He put in the breita what he knew for sure the answer was. And the one that he knew for sure the answer was on paksatot lichlito, when it rises into the funnel. And that point he said asur. When it was nitzok, which he didn't know, that he left out. Not so that you should be medayik that nitzok doesn't work. So Tashma, now the second half of our Mishnah. Maremi kli l'kli, person's pouring from one kli to another. Etche maremi menu mutar. The kli that he's pouring out of is fine. Had the beni beni asur. That means that what's in the interim is problematic. Shema mina nitzok chibur. So if you have here, you have a pitcher or a barrel up top he's pouring. You have a barrel or pitcher at the bottom that is problematic in terms of yayin nesach. Either there's yayin nesach in there or there's a goy touching it. So now the wine pours. It leaves the upper barrel and then it later on enters the lower barrel. But in between there's an arc of liquid that is neither in the upper barrel nor in the lower barrel. Our Mishnah says that what's in the upper barrel is fine. That implies what's outside the upper barrel, even before it enters the lower barrel, is problematic. Now, how does the arc of liquid ever become problematic? It didn't enter the lower barrel, so how is it problematic? It must be that nitzuk chiburu, that the flow is a chibur, and therefore whatever's nayin nesach below now arcs back up through that arc. Now, the Gemara's question is going to be obvious now. Well, if it's enough to get back up the arc to affect the liquid, why doesn't it affect the liquid in the upper barrel? So Mar says, "Initzok chibur, afilu degavei damano nami litzer." If that's a problem, then even the upper barrel, what's inside of there, should be problematic. Mar says, "Lo halo kasha, that's not a problem." Dekamekatvif ketufe. He pours in a stunted manner, in a staggering manner. What's that do? He pours the liquid. Before the liquid reaches the bottom barrel, he stops the pouring. And that liquid then continues down into the lower barrel. Right, he breaks the stream, but he has to break the stream before it ever touches the bottom barrel. Because if not, then you already have the nitzok, we'll pass it all the way back up to the upper barrel. So before it reaches the lower barrel, he cuts the stream off somehow, either by shaking it, pulling it back, jumping around, whatever the exact methodology that he uses. And because of that, the what is in the stream in between them is nitzok, because that will be there when it touches the bottom barrel. But the upper barrel is not affected, because he always cuts the stream off before it touches the bottom barrel. So mikom makom, we can see that nitzok chibur. Says, okay, ulutamech. According to your reasoning, now explain me the seifa. I am a seifa. Echira letocho hu da'asir. The barrel that the wine enters is problematic. Ha de beni beni, shari. That which is in between is mutar. I mean, if you want to be medayik from the latter half of the Mishnah, there are two statements in the latter half of the Mishnah. The barrel that it's leaving is mutar. The barrel it's entering is asur. You were only medayik from the part that said when it leaves the barrel, it's whatever's in the upper barrel is mutar. Oh, if it left it, that would be asur. Well, why don't you say the other way around? The seifa says whatever enters the lower barrel is asur. That means anything that has not entered is mutar. So again, what are we going to say here? Elamihal, lekalamashim mina. You can't make a diuk. You have two diukim. They're going to make opposite diukim. That means that our Mishnah can't give you a conclusion. So Tashma, I have another proof to this. Tashma, ame are mechavid lebor. The person is pouring from a barrel into a bor. Assumption here is that it's a Jew's wine. Is he pouring it into a non-Jew's bor, into a non-Jewish collection pit at the press? So that's yain esech. Kiluach hayurei mispat chavit ulamata asur. Anything, once it's left the upper barrel, anything in that arc down, anything on that flow is problematic. So Targama Rav Sheshet, Be'ovei Kochavim, Ame'are Da'ati Mikocho. So now, the Gemara says, originally we thought, again this is the Havamina, that it was a Jew pouring into the bor of a non-Jew or Jewish barrel that's been poured in. So over there we said, okay, well, if the ark is going to be problematic because it touched the bor, it sounds like Nitzok is a Chibor. Along comes the recitation and says, no, you misunderstood here. The pourer over here is an Ovi Kochavim. It's a non-Jew who's actually pouring over here. So Ovi Kochavim Mareh, Da'ati Mikocho. So then, what he's pouring is coming from Kocho. Because a non-Jew is pouring, we understood before it was a Jew pouring. So if it's a Jew pouring, we understand what's in the barrel is not problematic, because he can be katufe. And then the ark is problematic, because you have nitzok as chibur, and that'll be a proof that nitzok as chibur. Rosh Hashanah comes along and says, no, you misunderstood. This bite over here is talking about a case where it's a non-Jew pouring. Non-Jew pouring, you can't prove anything about nitzuk is chibur, because he's the actual one handling the wine. If he's handling the wine, the problem is not because of nitzuk chibur, it's because he's handling the wine. Rashi says, if the problem is him handling the wine, then why are you just worried about the kiluach? You should be worried about what's in the chavit itself too. Even if he was ketufei mekatfei, and you say nitzuk is chibur, what's in the barrel, he's still handling and moving around. If he's moving around these items, why isn't that problematic? And here comes the principle that we spoke about in the Mishnah that really sets the tone. We brought it earlier in the Gemara. That the difference here is that why? The fact that the goy never came into contact with the wine. Over here, the Ovi Kochavim never touched the wine. All he touched was the barrel that contained the wine. That which leaves the barrel, that's the gzeir on it. That was inside the barrel, it's not problematic. That's why an Ovi Kochavim is allowed to carry around barrels of the Jew. The Jew has sealed barrels. How can the goy carry those around? If you say that his koach affects what's inside, then when he carries around the barrels from it, should be problematic. The answer is no, it's not problematic, because anything inside is not problematic. Only what goes outside the barrel is problematic. Because it's a takana derabanan, he never touches, comes into the contact with the wine. There's no nisuch here. So nisuch is only when he comes into contact with the wine. So therefore, when he's pouring it out, it's kocho, there which leaves the barrel is problematic. What's inside the barrel is not problematic. So the reason, the problem here is not a problem of nitzok. It's not a problem of chibor to the bor below. The problem is the goy is pouring it. And there's his koach, and that's what makes it problematic over here. Samaru Rav Chista Lahanus Vito. So Rav Chista says to these wine pourers, from the word Svita comes from Soveyayin, right? Soveyayin, so there are these wine pourers. Kikailutu chamra, when you measure out wine, the Ovdech Chachamim to non-Jews, ktafe ktufe, cut it off. Don't pour in a straight stream, but rather do it in a stuttered manner, in a manner that doesn't allow the flow to be make a chibur back. Inami, nafse nefutse. Rashi says, it's interesting, you should stand a little further away. and you should toss it over to them. Might have been a pretty messy job. But he says, be zorek the wine from your barrel into their barrel. Don't let there be a chibur, any sort of connection between them. So now our understanding, of course, is that Rav Chisda believes that Nitzok is a problem because he's asking to do this. Rava said to these wine pourers, that was their job, they poured wine. Don't let the non-Jew help you in the pouring process. Dilma mishtalitu, maybe you'll forget yourselves. Bishadita leale, and you'll leave him pouring by himself. V'kati mikocho, and it comes from his koach, v'asir, and then it'll be asur. So from this, you see that Rava's worried about the koach of the Ovid Kochavim over here. He's worried about him taking full control and pouring. So don't have them help you. These wine pourers, don't let them have these Ovid Kochavim help you. Because what will happen is, oh, you'll get a phone call. Some noise will happen. Something will happen. You'll leave for a second. And then you left him holding the whole barrel and he's pouring. It'll come mikocho. That'll make everything else problematic. So that's the conclusion of Rava. Now, there are two things to discuss over here. One is Nitzok a chibur? Or is Nitzok enu chibur? So Rashi says over here that the Nitzok is a chibur because we have Rav Chisda who spoke to Lahanu Sevita and he told them that you have to be ktufei katfei or naftzei nefutzei. So that means really Nitzok chibur and that's halacha. We're going to paskin like Rav Chisda. Tosa says on that, I don't necessarily agree. I don't agree that the halacha here is like Rav Huna or like Rav Chisda. So that's the Rashi. If you look in Tosas, he says, Uposok Rashi. Rashi says, and we had Rav Huna earlier in the Gemara, right after the Mishnah, we said Rav Huna says that Nitzok is a chibur by Yain Esech. And now we have Chisda also saying that Nitzok is a chibur. So Rashi says, Uposok Rashi Rav Huna, Damar Nitzok chibur, mit the summer of Chisda ocha kavate. Rav Chisda holds like Rav Huna, and Maser Rav, we have a case. He had a case law where he told them that it's problematic if they did that. Aval Rabbeinu Tam Pasok, de Nitzok einu chibur. His grandson argued on him. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, Nitzok is not a chibur. So, why? Because we have Rav Sheshet, the Bacher Utfei. Rav Sheshet, who's a Bacher, Omar, the Nitzok eno chibur. He says that Nitzok is not a chibur because Targuma Rav Sheshet, Bobet Kochavim Amareh. He explained our case in the Brisa as someone who was pouring, meaning that they was being poured Ayidein Ovid Kochavim. It was Kocho. It wasn't a problem of chibur. It was rather a problem of Chobo. Also, Marzutra, who is a Batra, we're going to see coming up, is the end of our Gemara today, says also that you can drink from it together with a guy, and we see that Nitzok is not a chibur according to Marzutra. And also above, Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya explained our Mishnah as being in the case of Paksato Slichoto. The only problem of the wine left in the funnel is when the wine actually rises up into the funnel. That's the only time it's problematic. What did the Gemara answer? The Gemara answer is that Rav Chiya doesn't really know what it is by Nitzok. Rabbeinu Tam says that was a answer, that was a tshuva d'chuya. That was a bit, it was a hard answer. The Gemara just wanted to not prove anything about Nitzok from this. But the truth is, from Rav Chiya, it sounds exactly like that. The problem is only when the wine rises all the way up to the Meshpech, but the Nitzok would not be a chibur. So Rabbeinu Tam says, I have Rav Sheshet, I have Marzutra, I have Rav Chiya, all saying that Nitzok is any chibur. If that's the case, I think that Nitzok is eno chibur. And he says, I'll prove it to you, because our Gemara, we saw this in yesterday's daf as well as here, every time the Gemara comes up with a Mishnah or something that's problematic, it says, Shema Mina from this statement, Nitzok chibur. So it seems that the Gemara is troubled. If you're going to explain a Mishnah this way, if you're going to explain a Mora statement this way, then you're going to come out with the case being Nitzok chibur. And the Gemara doesn't like that. The Gemara keeps saying, Shema Mina Nitzok chibur, is that what you want the conclusion to be? From that, it seems like the Gemara really wants the conclusion to be Nitzok enu chibur, and always challenges somebody who explains it in a way that makes it Nitzok chibur, and then the Gemara will reject that explanation. So Rabbeinu Tam says, from all that, I say that Nitzok eino chibur. So Rashi says Nitzok is a chibur because you have Rav Huna, Rav Chisda, whereas Rabbeinu Tam says you have Rav Sheshet, Mazutra, and Rav Chiya, and the Gemara, Stamma the Gemara, he claims, is saying that Nitzok eino chibur, and therefore Nitzok is eino chibur. So now the last thing is a Tosfos that we actually mentioned before, that Rava said to these Shochvai, make sure that you're careful when you're pouring it out, not to leave it in the hands of the Ovid Chachamim. We actually saw this Tosfos back on Samach Amud Aleph, They brought this story here. Here it's relevant again, which is over here. If you look, it's the last Tosfos. It's just fun to read. Can't have a non-Jew pouring wine out of a barrel unless another Jew is really doing significant work with him. What happens, we talked about this case, where they have barrels on the back of a wagon that have a tap on it. They go around selling wine, and they open up the tap to let the wine out, and the wine will come out. But what happens? In order to make the wine flow faster, what does he do? He goes to the front of the wagon, and he pushes the wagon up, so now it's tipped. You know, whenever you have a cooler of some sort you take and you have the bottom of the cooler, when the liquid gets low enough, what do you have to do? You have to tip it for it to flow out. So here it was flowing even without tipping it. But when you tip it, it flows faster. There was a case like this where a goy lifted up the agala to help the flow come. It was flowing anyway, but he helped the flow come. They brought the question for the reed. He said, I don't want to be osir, but I don't want to be matir either. It seems that the wine would have flowed anyway. Just flowing better because it came mutar. He's helping, but he's doing help that doesn't have real significance. So therefore, he says, "Valiyeshli zaher." There's only enough left in this pitcher that you need to tip it, and he's doing it along with a young kid, a young Jewish kid over there. You have to be careful because the kid becomes Messiah Sheimbo Mamash. Then he's not really doing anything significant. The guy is doing all the work. If that's the case, then it will be problematic. So you have to be careful about who's together with the guy. If everything would happen without the guy, then when he is Messiah, it's an Imbo Mamash. How do you have that? Either it was flowing anyway, or a Jew is doing it with him and is a significant input over here. On the other hand, if it's a young kid that's helping him where he's having nothing significant, then we would say that it's problematic. And Gemara continues here with the case, which is, how gavra, da'asik chamra begishto bagishto. This person was moving wine with a siphon. A gishta and a bad gishta is a pipe and another pipe that are attached. One pipe you place into the barrel that has wine in it. The other pipe you place into the empty barrel. And it moves the wine. When you suck on the one end of the siphon in the empty barrel, you start a flow. And that flow will continue until it empties out the barrel that's full into the empty barrel. That's a siphon here. And sticks his finger at the end of the pipe, the funnel, and stops the flow. Asri Rabba Lekuli Chamra. Rabba was osir all the wine in the barrel. Samalei Rapopo, the Rabba. Rapopo says to Rabba, Vamalei Ravada Barmano, the Rabba. Vamalei Ravina Raval, Mai Nitz, by Mai. What's the connection? Why is there a problem of Isra over here? So he said, Benitzok? From Nitzok? Shmamina, Nitzok Chibur. You're suggesting over here that the problem is because he touched the end of the funnel, he stopped the flow, that through a Nitzok he affects all the wine that's all the way in the original barrel? From this you would conclude that Nitzok is a Chibur. I says, no, shiny autumn. The kuli chama gishta va gishta gorir. The wine would have flowed out of the funnel anyway. Had you done nothing here, what would have happened? It would have drained the entire first barrel and brought it into the second barrel. So when he sticks his finger there, what has he done? He's touched the effect all the wine that's in the previous barrel because it would have come out when he sticks his finger there. It's as if he's touched it all. Whereas in the case where we talk about nitzok, Nitzok is limited to the poorer. What's happening to the poorer? It has to be from the koach of the poorer. So Amar Mazutu Breder Nachman, Kanishkinin Shari. Now Kanishkinin is basically a utensil that has multiple straws coming out of it. And people sit around and they drink together out of a central pot that they drink with a straw out of it. So Hana Mile, so you have a Jew and a non-Jew drinking out of the straws that are there. So if they're drinking together, we say, Rav Nachman says it's fine. That's only if the Jew was the first one to stop. If the non-Jew stops first, then it's low, then it's problematic. Why? Because then we have him sucking up the straw. When he stops, whatever's in the straw now is backwashed back into the central pot. So over here, if the Jew stops first, we don't have a problem, because as long as the non-Jew is still sucking, none of his yain nesek goes back into the barrel. Then if the non-Jew stops first, the Obi Chum stops first, as soon as he stops drinking, whatever was touched his mouth now flows back into the utensil, and the Jew's still drinking, so that'll be problematic. So you can't do that. So Rabbi Bar Huna equal the Bay Rish Galuta, he went to Bay Sharalo, the Mishdebi Kanishkinin. He allowed them to drink out of these Kanishkinin, Jews and non-Jews. Igadamri, Rabba Bar Avuhna himself, Kufa Ishtei Mikanishkinin, he himself drank out of such a Kanishkinin. So here, Tosfos points out, wait, how could he do that? How could he drink? How could let other people drink? How do you know who's going to finish first? How do you know the Jew's going to finish first and the non-Jew's going to finish first? How can you drink, taking a bet that you're going to finish before the non-Jew? So the Rach says over here, that it's no Mayrim Obi Chachavim. It was that there were many Jews drinking around there. And then, so then why did he tell him he could do it? What's the Kamash Malon? He's Umar Kashmalan, the little mitzer, bizmanazem, mishum simcha. So that the Kamash Malon here is that not about Yainesech, Nitzok, anything like that. It's simply about whether you're allowed to drink such an item or drink in this manner today because of simcha. I mean, avelus of churban abayit. Maybe we shouldn't do this. So he's saying this is not in that position of something that was eliminated because of churban abayit. So mishum simcha, it's not a problem. So that's what the Rach says over here. His heter here has nothing to do with the fact that you can do this lachatchila because we don't let you make a bet that you're going to finish before the guy. That's too big. That's uncertainty that you can't take. So therefore we say, you know, that the question of when he said it was mutar about simcha, that two Jews can drink from it, that it's okay, it's permissible. The last thing I want to mention over here is that with the siphon case. The siphon case is very interesting. Rashi is clear over here that the siphon goes down to the bottom of the original barrel, to the base of the original barrel. This is actually subject to a machlokes back on Daf Samach Amud Aleph. It's a Tosos, it's really on Nun Terem Bet. That Tosos continues on the top of Samach Aleph. There, Tosos brings a question about whether the locha is like Rav Papa, the Gemara over there on Daf Nun Terem Bet, and Samach Amud Aleph, where the locha is like Rav Papa. Rav Papa said over there, if a barrel had a berez in it, and it broke out, the barrel is broke out, there's a hole, and Obi Chachim sticks his finger on the berez. So there, we had two Lashonot in Rav Papa. One Lashon said that anything in the area of the hole is problematic, everything else is mutar. The other Lashon said, whatever's above the hole would have flowed out anyway is problematic. Whatever would have stayed in without the hole being covered, that is mutar. Those are two Lashonot in Rav Papa. Rashi over there says that the Gemara then says that it's a Machloket Tanaim. And the Machloket Tanaim, Rav Papa set up like Rabbi Yehuda, who is a Yechida, who is a individual. So then he says, Rashi says, the Lachla is not like Rav Papa, because there is a yachid that goes after him. He's a dat yachid, not a loch like that. The Rabbeinu Tam comes along and says, that's not true. There are many times that we pass like a dat yachid against the rabbim. The loch is not like Rav Papa over there, because in our Gemara over here, you have Rav Papa and Rava. Rav Papa came and questioned Rava's statement, and Rava disagrees with Rav Papa. Now Rava is, even though Rav Papa is a later Amora, Rava was his Rebbe. So if Rava argues on Rav Papa, we're going to paskin like Rava. Now, the Rabbeinu Tam reads our Gemara differently than Rashi. Rashi said that the siphon went down all the way to the bottom of the barrel. And therefore, when he touches the siphon, everything is problematic. Rabbeinu Tam says the siphon does not reach the bottom of the barrel. And the question is about the wine that is beyond the siphon. That's what Rava and Rav Papa are arguing about in the Gemara. The wine after the siphon, is it mutar or not mutar? Rav Papa says, why are you making what's after the siphon a sur? Nitzok? It's not going to flow through the siphon. It's going to be left over because the siphon only takes what it reaches to. So he says, that's the case. Why is it a sur? Because of nitzok? He said, we don't know nitzok as chibur. So then on comes, Rava says, no, that it is a sur. That it doesn't matter. The fact that it's because it would have flowed out anyway, even what's left behind is problematic. So what do you see from that? You have Machlokas, Rava and Rav Papa and the Gemara over there about the residual wine that wouldn't have flowed out. So Rabbeinu Tam says there, he goes, I have a proof that the Loch is not like Rav Papa. Not like Rashi because he's a Dat Yochid, but because his Rebbe Rav argues on him. His Rebbe Rav argues on him, who's a Batra, we're not going to hold like Rav Papa. Along comes the Rav Moshe Mikutzi, the Mag, the Baal, the Sefer Mitzvah of Dolor, and says, I disagree with Rabbeinu Tam, that's not the case over here. It's clear from the case in our Gemara that the siphon reaches the bottom. The siphon reaches the bottom of the burial. And the argument about what is bad over there is whether the wine that's flowing out of that barrel, whether that would be asur or mutar. So now, why did Rabbeinu Tam not want that explanation? He says, well, I have Rav Papa over here. He says, when you stick your finger on the hole of the berez, that whatever wine would have flowed out is asur. So why does Rav Papa disagree with Rava and Argimara over here by the siphon? Sticks his finger on the siphon. How is that different than sticking your finger on the tap? Why is that different? So Rabbeinu Tam says, from that I prove to you that they're not talking about what's in the siphon. It's about what's outside the siphon, what the siphon doesn't reach. But the Smag says no. Says the siphon reaches the bottom. And they're still arguing about what's left in the siphon or the siphon would have brought out. Ah, what's the difference between the two cases? In the case of the hole in the barrel, If the goy puts his finger there, he stops it. He takes his finger away, what happens? It's going to flow. When he does it by the siphon, what happens? He puts his finger on the siphon, the flow stops. Takes his finger off the siphon, what happens? The flow does not start again. In order to restart the flow from the siphon, you have to suck again to restart the flow. So that's the difference in Rapapa. Rapapa over here says the wine's going to flow out anyway. If the goy puts his finger there, it stops, takes it out, it's going to start again. That's why anything that would have flowed out is asur. Case by the siphon, that's a case where the siphon reaches the bottom. When he plugs the hole, it stops. It won't continue afterwards. So therefore, I don't say garir, that it continues, and that's why he's touching everything. So that's how he distinguishes, the smug distinguishes between what Rapapa and our Gemara Rapapa over here. And therefore he says, our Gemara is not a proof to what the halacha is like. Beinu Tam brought our Gemara as a proof that the halacha is not like Rapapa, because Rava, his Rebbe, argues on him. Smug says it's not relevant. The Gemara over here is not talking about the same case. Rapapa himself disagrees with his halacha before, because these are two different cases. Beinu Tam says, no, he doesn't disagree. He's talking about the residual wine. So it's the same case. So that's how this Gemara is important for the halacha and a Gemara earlier on that was brought in the Tosfot. It's not brought here, but I'm just telling you about the Tosfot earlier that really had a machlokes between the Rabbeinu Tam and the Smag about this. All right, we'll stop over here.